Carlisle now, and good race.
This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Let me just adjust my volume here in the studio. Breeders' Cup 2019 now in the books, and we'll be doing some recap on that as we proceed through this hour. Do want to remind you that it is a Sunday. That means NFL Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. If you want to come down, decompress after a couple of big days of Breeders' Cup action, and hopefully you're flush with some money to play. You can watch all the races and catch all the football action as well every Sunday during the season here at the Clubhouse Racebook. 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. The place was hopping yesterday. I mean, hopping. Friday, too. Friday was a good crowd on Friday, but yesterday the race book was really packed. I wrapped up OTB Live at maybe 3:30, 3:45 or so when things switched over to NBC. And then I was kind of sitting in the studio doing some work and making some plays and whatnot and alternating between going out on the front side of the race book here. And there was a nice crowd and stuck around right until the classic, which went off at what 8:45 or so. So it was a good crowd. They stuck around. Everybody seemed to have a lot of fun. Like Friday, there was a good mix of some logical plays and some price plays as well. So hopefully everybody had a fun time, not just enjoying the racing but cashing some tickets as well. Vino Rosso looking good in the classic. I thought McKenzie just was the best older horse this year, despite the record. And at the top of the stretch, I thought that might prove to be true. But Vino Rosso came to him, and I thought they were going to duke it out right to the wire. And there were a couple of strides where I thought McKenzie is going to have some heart here and hold him off. But he added to his second-place finishes this year. A quirky record for McKenzie, given how good he is. 7 starts this year, 2 wins, 5 seconds. He's always right there, but he was right there again yesterday as Vino Rosso eventually pulls away. The chart margin was actually 4.25. As I say, top of the stretch, into the stretch, you thought they may duel the whole way. But Vino Rosso separated himself. McKenzie separated by the same margin from Higher Power in third. Unfortunately, Mongolian Groom broke down and subsequently, late last night, was announced was euthanized. And that was, boy, we were going to get through the whole weekend really unblemished until that happened. And that was part of the story at Santa Anita this year. But, you know, so an unfortunate situation in the classic with Mongolian Groom. But otherwise, as I say, the weekend went along well. Attendance Friday, I think 45, I read something in that neighborhood. 42, 45, 65, I think, yesterday. So the attendance was pretty good. The handle was very good. No surprise there. Nice full fields and competitive, and there were a lot of opportunities out there. But Vino Rosso over McKenzie in the classic. You would have to think probably he gets the older Eclipse Award. Horse of the Year, Bricks and Mortar seems in a good spot. Three-year-old filly, does Kafefi now step into that spot? Can she do it with the sprint record and with her record? That would be a question mark. The two-year-old side after Friday, Tis the Law for Jack Knowlton and Sakatoga. You would have to think that one's in the driver's seat and maybe controls his own destiny with a win in the Kentucky Jockey Club. I think an Eclipse for Tis the Law is certainly possible. So Maximum Security, he's in the driver's seat and kind of controls his own destiny. Winning the Cigar Mile, you would have to think, hands him a three-year-old crown at this point. I'm looking, Code of Honor yesterday disappoints in the Breeders' Cup Classic, finishing seventh in the field of 11. And there were some disappointments over the weekend. Code of Honor, Come Dancing, Dennis's Moment on Friday. So there were some disappointments as well. But nice weekend for Irad Ortiz. Good article. Check it out in the Daily Racing Forum by David Grenig, where Irad was talking about maybe his business slowing down a little bit at Belmont in the fall meet, where I think he finished ninth in the standings, according to the article. And it was noted his business on the top end, very good, but day-to-day business had maybe slowed down, and he and his agent discussed it, and the agent said, we're live in the Breeders' Cup, and that can change everything. And sure enough, Irad Ortiz, four wins over the 2 days. The win on Vino Rosso, also Bricks and Mortar, spun to run in the Dirt Mile, and on our Friday, he won the Turf Sprint on a four-wheel drive, so he winds up with four wins over the weekend. He's now overall in his career 9 wins for 53 mounts in the Breeders' Cup, Irad Ortiz. So good weekend for him. He wins the Bill Shoemaker Award for outstanding Breeders' Cup performance for a jockey. Chad Brown, good weekend for him. Bricks and Mortar, Uni, Structor on Friday, so good weekend for Chad Brown as well. And of course, Mike Rapoli and team and Todd Pletcher, when you win the Classic, that makes your weekend right there. Let's go back and take a look at some of the stakes races. Bottom of the hour, we will be joined by our friend Steve Bick. We'll go over some of the Saturday action with Mr. Bick. But now let's take a look at some of the Friday action. And we'll start with the highlight of the day, which fell apart. Dennis's Moment. Came into the race with buzz deservedly off the two wins in the career so far, and you had to draw a line through the first start where the horse lost the jockey, but the two subsequent starts were very good, and then comes to Southern California a little early and is working lights out. But Dennis's Moment, and there's a nice, if you go to Twitter and look for Chad Harmon's Twitter feed, I may have actually retweeted it, but he had a nice sequence of photos of Dennis's Moment coming out of the gate and going right to his knees. So Dennis's Moment stumbles out of the gate and really is never in it after that. Winds up last in the field of 8. I thought Shoplifted might be a little bit interesting. That one finished 7th. 8 Rings, the Baffert horse, was the second favorite behind Dennis's Moment. 8 Rings finishes 6th in the field of 8. So at 45-1, it stormed the court for Peter Urton getting it done. And Oh Dior from Blaine Wright, the number 7. That one threatens a couple of times off of a career debut up at Golden Gate. And boy, this was a nice performance at 28-1 from the second time starter running second. And number 2, Wrecking Crew, runs third. So 45-1, 28-1, 39-1, your top 3 finishers. Scabbard, who was the third choice of 5-1, winds up running fourth. So the big two, it would have been hard to imagine, things can happen in the Breeders' Cup, but it would have been hard to imagine both Dennis's Moment and 8 Rings not in the hunt at all. 45-1, 28-1, 39-1, 50 cent trifecta, $1,900 plus there in the juvenile. But as I say, with that situation, Storm the Court came into the race having won the career debut, maiden special weight, then lost his jockey in the Del Mar Futurity, then was third in the American Pharoah. So 4 starts, a maiden special, and this is the only stakes win. Again, I think Tis the Law may be in a good spot to move forward towards that 2-year-old Eclipse with a win in Kentucky. I said yesterday, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, Dennis's Moment and team, based in Kentucky, race certainly didn't take anything out of them. Now, did the stumble? They would have to go back and maybe take a look at the horse and make sure the horse came out 100%. Then they may just regroup and say, let's head for next year, go for a Kentucky Derby horse. But being based at Churchill, I could see them maybe taking a shot at the Kentucky Jockey Club. As they say, if the horse came out 100%, certainly did not get pushed throughout the race, and It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But again, 'tis the law. You would have to think probably in a pretty good spot to control his own destiny as far as that two-year-old Eclipse, given the results of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on Friday. All right, let's go back to the Juvenile Fillies turf. We'll talk to our friend Steve Bick a little bit later on. He liked sharing quite a bit, sharing the Grand Motion horse at 13-1. Our friend Mike Callahan also liked sharing. So if you pulled up the one sheet, maybe you got a little tip on sharing. If you listen to Racing Across America and Steve Bick on Friday morning, maybe you toss that one into your mix. But the Grand Motion horse, Manny Franco on board. And I said to Steve on Friday morning on Racing Across America, as we were talking, I looked it up. Manny Franco had had a third place finish in the Breeders' Cup before, but no wins, but gets it done here. Number 11, Sharing, pushes by number 12, Sweet Melania, and coming late, the number 5, Dea, the European, just gets up for second over Sweet Melania. Albina, the horse I liked, runs fourth, the Euro, just had a, I don't know, a trip where didn't quite get free Albina until too late and did wind up fourth in there. But it was a nice win for Graham, Manny Franco, Sharing, again, $29.60 there, so a nice price. Came out of debut up at Saratoga, ran a close-up third. The follow-up in an off-the-turf event won to break the maiden, then went down and won the Salima with a return to turf and a move to two turns. The numbers seemed maybe a little bit light, but a horse that was on the improve and a horse that, despite the numbers, had gotten it done pretty convincingly in the prior two starts and stepped it up, wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf on Friday afternoon. And again, it was notable. Manny Franco, who clearly, if you're following New York racing, you know this is a guy who is moving in the right direction. And so it was nice to see him with some live mounts over the weekend and getting it done on Sharing to kind of validate. It's always nice to see those young guys get that kind of validation on the big stage, the Breeders' Cup or Triple Crown races or whatever. So Manny Franco tucks a Breeders' Cup victory onto his resume, into the back pocket. Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. I like British Idiom in here. The favorite wound up to be Donna Veloci, or Donna Veloci, the Simon Callahan runner, who had broken the maiden in the career debut with a solid buyer, a 91 buyer for a two-year-old filly. Pretty good number. So on that, the betting public tilted in that direction. I had her in my mix. I couldn't put her on top, though, just because the career debut, yeah, good number, but it was the career debut, now stepping up against more experienced company and going from 6.5 to a mile and a 16. Well, Donna Veloci runs second, and here's the 2-1 favorite. Second choice is British Idiom, who was coming out of the Alcibiades win for Brad Cox, which was pretty convincing in and of itself. And she wins here by a neck. Bass, the Baffert runner, the number 6, runs third. And running fourth in here, number 3, Perfect Alibi. I also like Wicked Whisper from Steve Asmussen a little bit. That one disappointed, running fifth. Is what, the third choice? Yeah, it's 7-2. But British Idiom gets it done. And this one was kind of interesting. And, you know, Mattaquette and Michael Dubb, some potent connections. They pulled this one out of a sale last year for $40,000. And if I'm not mistaken, they credited Liz Crowe with this one, who has been a very potent picking out some winners for these connections at sales the last 2 years, obviously. We've had her on up at Saratoga talking about it. But given that they paid $40,000, they debuted up at Saratoga in one of those restricted maiden races, restricted to horses purchased at auction. I think the cutoff was $45,000, so the $40,000 obviously made it in. But you had to think, those restricted maidens, it was a great idea to add that this year because Saratoga, known for debuting expensive, well-bred two-year-olds, and so it gave those folks who had paid $40,000 kind of an opportunity to come up and maybe get a Saratoga win and not have to face the $1 million horses or the $500 auction purchases. So they were nice. It was a nice addition to the condition book, but you had to think, you know, these are lesser maiden special weight races. So she comes out of that and then moves to the Alcibiades at Keeneland and the win there, the convincing win there, with a nice improved buyer number, kind of says, all right, this validates. They wound up with a bargain, a $40,000 bargain. And now to be 3-for-3 and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly, they really wound up with a bargain. British Idiom, she'll be interesting to watch next year as a three-year-old filly. All right, let's move on now and go to Juvenile Filly's Turf. Or no, Juvenile Turf, excuse me. The Juvenile Turf? Juvenile, I'm just looking at my page here. Yeah, Juvenile Turf. Race number 6 on Friday afternoon. And the 6th race was one of the Chad Brown victories over the weekend. I like Decorate an Invader. We're not really going to see the trip here when we pick it up. Decorate an Invader, the West Point horse, number 4. Boy, you can see him on the outside there. And we don't see backstretch was in and amongst a group of horses. Irad Ortiz kind of had to pull him to the back of the pack. So he's way in back, made a great move here. You see Decorate an Invader on the outside, but just too wide on that turf course. He'll wind up running a disappointing 4th in here, disappointing given the trip. But Structor gets it done. I had Structor right underneath. And I'll tell you what, given it, you know, the connections, Chad Brown coming out of a win in the Pilgrim to make the record 2-for-2 prior to this, the $12 was kind of nice on Structor. Running 2nd was Billy Batch. 3rd was Gear Jockey. And 4th was Decorated Invader. But the notable in there was Decorated, notable for me, was Decorated Invader having just a really tough trip. Coming out of the win up at Woodbine in the summer. And again, on the backstretch, there were a couple of front runners, and then there was a whole pack right behind. And Decorated Invader, just circumstances right out of the gate, just put that one right in the middle of the pack and just got kind of shuffled back until last, kind of approaching the turn. And then Irad made a great move on the turn, but that forced him kind of wide. And again, on that turf course, that's a rough situation. So it does wind up to be Structor getting it done, now 3-for-3 in the career for Chad Brown. So again, he'll be an interesting potential in that subdivision I like quite a bit, potentially three-year-old on the turf, but they were talking about maybe trying the dirt next year with that one after the race. So we'll see what happens with Structor going forward, but pretty good two-year-old career, and again, adding another Breeders' Cup victory to the resume for Chad Brown. All right, and finally, kick things off on Friday with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. We're going to take a look at the horse I liked, the horse everybody liked, at 3-2 is the favorite, four-wheel drive. It was the Wesley Ward runner, 2-for-2 in the career so far, debuted in a $100,000 stake and won that. Won the Grade 3 Futurity at Belmont just prior to this. And four-wheel drive, as you can see, pulls away here. Winds up a chart margin of 3/4 of a length, as there is a little bit of a late challenge from Chimney Rock, the number one horse, running 3rd in here, another miracle. Kamari, the other Wesley Ward horse, runs 4th. Cambria, another Wesley Ward runner, a little disappointing, running 9th. ALE, European runner, runs 10th. That horse went off as the 3rd choice at 6-1, so that was a little bit disappointing in there, perhaps. But again, it was a nice mix on the day. It bookended a favorite in the opening Breeders' Cup race at $5, and then we had the big price ending the day for the Breeders' Cup action with a big price with a little bit of an upset there, with a big upset in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. So a nice mix of opportunities wagering wise for everybody on the Friday card. It kind of wound up similarly on Saturday as well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, do a quick little round of some handicapping. Then we'll take another break and come back, and Steve Bick will join us, and we'll go over some of the Saturday Breeders' Cup action. Stay tuned. Racing Across America will continue.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum, from outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife. Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vanflix Barn, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you've come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady. In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Racing Across America, Seth Merrill in the studio. Again, thanks for joining us. Nice card today at Aqueduct. If you haven't looked at it yet, this is going to be a very nice Sunday card. And again, as has been the case over the past couple of days, post time and early noon, so keep that in mind as well. And with daylight savings winding up last night, a lot of the venues around the country will be going to a little bit, you know, they're kind of winter post times over the next week or so. So keep that in mind. You have to shift your schedule just slightly to get back into the swing of things now that, again, we've gone to standard time. But today, some nice stakes action down at Aqueduct. Let's take a little look, quick look at those. Chelsea Flower, $100,000 for the two-year-old fillies, going a mile on the grass. Today's fifth race. I have it 9, 5, 7, and 8. Sparkling Sky on top for Todd Pletcher. Broke the maiden nicely up at Saratoga, and then a fourth-place finish. Pretty good close-up fourth-place finish in the Miss Grillo behind Selflessly and Cristal, both of whom wound up in the Friday action at the Breeders' Cup. But I think this horse, as compared to the rest of this bunch, seems to have a nice edge. Not big, but a nice little edge, I would say, on most in here. Jose Ortiz on board. English Breeze would be the horse that is perhaps numbers-wise, the closest to Sparkling Sky. Sparkling Sky, last time in the Miss Grillo, winds up fourth. English Breeze winds up fifth in there. But again, with a nice improving set of buyer numbers throughout the first three starts of the career, David Donk trainee looks competitive. And Lady Fatima for Mark Cassie comes down after a couple of turf starts up at Woodbine. This one might be interesting. Gets a little stretch out today. The optional claiming went up at Woodbine last time. Seem to signal this horse has gotten into potentially some good form right now. So another player in here. The Aqueduct 5th, the Chelsea Flower, 9, 5, 7, and 8. Race number 8 on the card, more stakes action. It's the Zagora this afternoon at Aqueduct. I have it 4, 5, 8, and 2. Fool's Gold on top for Chad Brown. Javier Castellano on board. Comes out of a 5th in the Glens Falls up at Saratoga, but won the way up before that. The way up being at a mile and a half this race this afternoon, at a mile and a half as well. The Glens Falls a little bit shorter at 1 3/8, but bouncing back to that mile and a half, maybe we can get back to the very good number fired in the way at two starts back. Empress of the Nile in the second spot for Grand Motion. Well beaten in the Flower Bowl, but whereas Fool's Gold was fifth in the Glens Falls, this one second behind Mississippi. Mississippi Graham had out at the Breeders' Cup yesterday. So again, Empress of the Nile in the mix, and then Lemon Zip in the third spot. Comes up off a couple of nice tries down at Laurel, and I think the last one may signal this horse is in some pretty good form right now, and that last one was at this mile and a half trip. So we'll look for maybe a little value from Lemon Zip. In the 8th, the Zagora, 4, 5, 8, and 12. And finally, the Nashua also today. The Nashua, one of those fun two-year-old races towards the end of the year. Grade 3 event, $150,000. You can typically look at these horses to be players as the calendar turns somewhere on the three-year-old stakes scene, whether they will rise to the top or be on a second tier. The performers that come out of here doing well, you would think, will play into some of that three-year-old action. I have an 8, 7, 10, and 5, the number 8, Maru. Monmouth, two starts. Broke the maiden very convincingly the middle of July, and then towards the end of September came back and jumped into a little stakes race and won that convincingly. I think, again, these aren't necessarily your top tier at this point of two-year-olds. Don't know whether they'll be top tier three-year-olds. There is that potential. But I think they're kind of the second tier of two-year-old stakes performers at this point. And I think at that level, Maru is solid. So we'll put that one on top. Chase Stracker in the second spot. Todd Pletcher, trainee, broke the maiden pretty convincingly in the debut. But that they chose to go down to Parks for that one just has me questioning maybe how good this horse is, but certainly looked pretty good in the career debut. Ashar for Kieran and Shadwell, Bite Into Mischief, lived up to that in the career debut. This one has the potential, I think, to be pretty good. Paid $650,000, looked good in the career debut. The number was okay, a little bit lighter than my top two, but I won't be surprised to see the horse move forward and improve. So in the Nashua this afternoon at Aqueduct, 8, 7, 10, and 5. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, as promised, Steve Bick, he was live all week long with his radio show from Santa Anita, and he was live, obviously, there yesterday as well. So we'll get a scene setter and what it was like on track yesterday, some of his thoughts on the Saturday stakes action as well. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of branch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning, the day after, as it were, a nice couple of days out at Santa Anita with the Breeders' Cup action. We talked to Steve Bick on Thursday, actually, but replayed portions on Friday and Saturday. Tossed out a little sharing. We appreciated that on the Friday action. Steve, I'm looking at your picks as well. Yesterday, Mattoli and Vino Rosso spun to run, bricks and mortar in there. So a good day for you over on the SteveBick.com webpage, but we'll talk a little bit racing in a couple of minutes, but we'll get some overall thoughts. But first of all, let me just welcome you in and say good morning. Thanks for joining us early out there in Southern California.
Good morning, Seth. Well, we got the extra hour. We got that hour of sleep, right?
Yeah.
So it's early, but it's not so early.
Give us the scene setter from the 2 days. Again, we talked to you on Thursday, but you were there Friday, and it seems like the report on the numbers were very good. Certainly the weather looked very good, but just give us the scene setter over the couple of days out at Santa Anita.
Well, you don't have a better backdrop and a better facility for this event And what was most notable was as the week went on and as racing started Thursday and then the Juvenile Day Friday, things had a real, I thought, a very good vibe. And the concerns and all of the, you know, all of the issues that kind of came along with the decision to keep the event here, and you know, all the you know, careful examination between the horses and you know, media attention and everything else, a lot of that burdensome atmosphere was basically falling away with the passing race. And then into Saturday, you know, Friday is always a little bit quieter, even with people, you know, arriving. Not everybody is here on Friday, and the day builds. And then by Saturday, things just got better and better, and the energy and the excitement levels all were reaching, you know, a terrific height. And I think in that hour between the Turf and the Classic, everybody, particularly those of us that are involved closely, whether it's media or whether it's ownership or any other stakeholding, you know, people that are really attentive to the game, players, etc. Everybody was just, I think, feeling like this had, you know, come off and you know, it basically was going to be a perfect 2 days. And it even seemed that way when Vino Rosso crossed the wire. And I think only people that were, you know, that were in touch visually with Mongolian Groom pulling up, even were aware that, you know, that there had been an incident and, you know, that a horse was in distress. I mean, I had to stretch near the wire at the track apron, and I did not even realize it until Gambat and the Mongolians kind of came hurriedly out of a viewing stand, and then Baffert after. You know, after a little bit, and then heard Baffert talking, and you know, realized that, you know, put two and two together before I ever saw anything. So, you know, a lot of people left here, I think, very ebullient and in great high spirit, without even being aware that, you know, there was going to be this, you know, this aftermath that just is so disheartening. Just two perfect days, and you know, literally. You know, literally 100 yards from, you know, from getting out, you know, without an incident, and you know, there's the incident, and so, you know, now the headlines are going to be about, you know, about a horse at the highest level, those kinds of things, and it's just deflating. I've got to, you know, talk about it obviously all week on radio, and. You know, I want to celebrate, you know, the 14 sets of connections and those, you know, even those horses and trainers, riders, donors, that, you know, that ran well and valiantly in defeat. There's some wonderful stories. And yet, you know, this is going to have to, you know, this is going to have to, you know, cast a shadow over everything. So, from that standpoint, it really does. I don't know. I don't. Would it be different if something had happened, you know, early on the card? I don't know. It just when you felt that we were going to, you know, basically pull this off and send everybody home with you know, feeling good. It's just not to be. That's what's so difficult. And I think if it wasn't for the people that don't understand the sport and don't want to, or are so myopic about animals and about their partnership to our animals and the partnership that we have with them in racing, it's almost impossible to try to explain or to you know, I'm not trying to, I wouldn't want to be dismissive at all, but, you know, everybody within the sport understands. And, you know, those that are reading sensationalized news accounts, they're not going to understand. And I'm not sure how we, you know, how we deal with that long-term.
It was definitely a disappointing end that took some of the air out of the balloon, no question about it. But as you say, there were a lot of good stories during the weekend. And in anticipation of it, we were looking at some of the races and the Philly and Mayer sprint, the sprint itself, and, of course, the Classic. And let's start and get some thoughts on some of that stakes action. And, again, you'll have a lot of great review of the action as well on your radio show this week. But let's take a look at the Classic, watch the stretch run here. I like McKenzie. I had McKenzie over Vino Rosso. You had you had Vino Rosso on top in your mix. I couldn't argue that Vino Rosso coming out of that jockey club was in good form, and with the win earlier was a solid contender. I just thought all year long McKenzie was the best older horse. And now with the second yesterday, it's such a fluky record. I mean, he had the great win in the Whitney. So 7 starts this season, 2 wins and 5 seconds for him. As they say, it's a really fluky record for a very good older horse. But he winds up second again. Vino Rosso, convincingly, about top of the stretch, 100 yards in, I thought, oh, this is going to be a nice duel down the stretch. But Vino Rosso winds up chart margin of 4.25. Same chart margin between McKenzie and Higher Power, a late runs third. But it was a nice win for Vino Rosso, Todd Pletcher. Irod Ortiz capping a really big weekend for him in the Classic.
Well, the story is Vino Rosso and what a terrific season he's had overall. And you look at coming out here for the Gold Cup. That was a brilliant move by Pletcher and Vinny Viola and Mike Rivoli to get him a race over the track, and chances are this track was even heavier this weekend, which is a separate issue, a separate topic. But Vino Rosso, a true mile-and-a-quarter horse, and that had been the discussion for so many storylines in this race, that McKenzie, probably is more a mile to mile-and-an-eighth type. And I didn't really buy into it all that much because I was here for the big cap, and I saw him lose the big cap by a nostril to Gift Box. So that to me, that was a little immaterial. Some of it is, he, at this distance of 10 furlongs, he has to be ridden, very carefully, and some things have to happen. Then there's Higher Power, best race game at the mile and a quarter down at Del Mar in the Pacific Classic. Then there's the link, who finished fourth in here, and the whole story with her was we're better off running a mile and a quarter with her than we are a mile and an eighth at the Distaff. And actually, turns out that wasn't a bad decision because she wasn't beating Blue Prize. Nobody was beating Blue Prize yesterday. And in fact, Blue Prize and Vino Rosso, both coming off of their prep performances and only moving forward from them. Vino Rosso could not have looked more impressive in the handful of mornings that he was here. And, there were so many horses who came in and really did not handle the track all that well. And you understand that. It's the thing that gave, I think, people that wanted to like Vino Rosso confidence was the fact that he'd come out here and run so well in that Gold Cup, and that was my feeling personally. So Vino Rosso, a really nice win for Todd Pletcher, and the glee of Pletcher to get this one piece that's been missing from his resume, to get this win, is really nice for him. And Vinny Viola, in fact, I put up the, they got a 111 buyer, and I put up a picture that I captured of Vinny and Mike Rivoli embracing, and it was really a joyous scene for them. So, a result that up on the top that really, I think, trying to equate the championship implications, and it's kind of interesting because Mattoli Mazzoli's obviously Sprinter of the Year. Is he also the older horse? He's certainly going to get both. There's people who are talking about him as Horse of the Year. So where does that leave Vino Rosso after a very good campaign? How is he not? My gut reaction, I'll vote for him as older horse, and I'll vote for Mazzoli as Sprinter. And of course, Bricks and Mortar as Horse of the Year. But I thought it was a very good result and a fair race that was run, considering how slow the times were leading up to the Classic. This was run in racehorse time. 2:02 and change, 2:02 and 4, on a track that was, you know, basically 3 seconds slow at every distance. That was a big performance.
Yeah, well, obviously on track, we weren't watching the NBC broadcast, but Mike Rapoli, when they accepted the trophy, kind of tipped his cap and said this was the last horse that Jimmy Crupie bought for he and yeah. Vinnie Viola. So he kind of gave a, he said, you know, earlier in my career he'd gotten Uncle Mo for me, and he got this one for both me and Vinnie Viola. So again, it was nice to see him kind of pay tribute to Jimmy Crupie.
Yeah, no doubt. And of course, we should note that John Gunther and his daughter, this is from their incredible Fruit Bear Band, and Dino Rosso, a big win too for Curlin, for John Ventura, and Hillisdale. We'll get a plug in for Hillisdale as well here, and I thought it was for a lot of reasons. I like the way that's going in, and that was all right. Good result.
Let's move on one race earlier. Again, you alluded to it already. Maybe, not maybe, I think it's almost definite, crowned the Horse of the Year, given the results on the rest of the weekend. Breeders' Cup Turf, Bricks and Mortar, the number 9 horse here. Hadn't been seen since the win in the Arlington Million. He looked great. Another win for Irod Ortiz. The number 9 Bricks and Mortar makes a nice late run, gets up by a head. He loves just getting it done, just knowing where the finish line is. Bricks and Mortar over United, over Anthony Van Dyke, over Zulu Alpha. But again, given the situation this year in all of the other divisions, and the fact that this horse is now 6-for-6 with 5 Grade 1 wins, you would have to think this is the Horse of the Year being crowned here.
Well, and not only, you know, not only is there the season that is so spectacular, but let's also acknowledge the fact that this horse, it's a miracle that he even
came
back.
Yeah.
It's so unlikely that he was even able to return to the races, let alone do what he's done. So that's a testimony to a lot of patience. You heard Seth Klarman talk about it, and Chad Brown. He's just been spectacular, and I know that one conversation is that Chad is heart sick, I think, that, you know, the Bricks and Mortar is going to go stand stud abroad. He would love to keep them in training because he basically has never been better. It's just unbelievable. And this was a terrific performance. There was a point, a little, you know, approaching, I guess it was just ahead of the eight ball, and he had a little bit of trouble. You could tell Arad popped him out and tried to, you know, get him out in the open, see daylight, and he came running in the meantime. Flavian Pratt, who had an amazing Breeders' Cup, 14 pounds, 1 win, 4 seconds, 4 thirds, and he literally could have won 5 races. We'll probably get to it as we talk. But United at 51-1, and Richard Mandela waiting for them to come back. Mandela was like stunned. He thought that United was going to win the race, and he tipped his hat to Bricks and Mortar. Anthony Van Dyke, and frankly, the Europeans, as a collective lot, they were really ordinary, top to bottom, except for Joseph O'Brien's win, which is really quite a nice moment here that is being kind of forgotten about.
We were talking about that. I just want to toss in, we were talking about that yesterday here in the studio. He's got to be the only one. He won the Breeders' Cup race as a jockey, and now won his Breeders' Cup race as a trainer.
Well, Freddie had won 5, 2 on the Esk, and 3 with Golden Coast.
So, okay, all right, okay.
Put that one away.
We were thinking of trying to come up with. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And I'm just kind of looking here. Why don't we go back to and take a look at Uni. Or wait, let's take a look at Blue Prize. Let's look at the distaff. That's chronologically in the next order. So the distaff, one race prior. And again, Midnight Bijou also was in line potentially for a horse of the year, kind of a consideration with a win yesterday, but it was not to be. Midnight Bijou, the number four horse. Blue Prize, I said when I handicapped this, Blue Prize and Paradise Woods are those kind of horses whose record just it doesn't necessarily indicate their talent. So they get a little bit overlooked perhaps, but Blue Prize, very talented six-year-old mare. She gets it done. The late run from Midnight Bijou just wasn't enough. Top of the stretch, I thought, oh, this is going to be a miracle. She's going to get up and get it done. But she just, when the running started in about the last 200 yards, Blue Prize still just had a little too much. Midnight Bijou second, Serengeti Empress third in here. But again, nice try by Midnight Bijou, but she doesn't do it. You'd still think with the campaign, she's got to be the older filly and mare, right?
I would certainly hope so. And Blue Prize is a great story for a number of reasons. Nacho Correa is the modern-day Angel Tenna. He's a fourth generation horseman, Argentinian horseman, the land of the gaucho, where horses have been really prized, whether it's polo, whether it's racing, equestrian sport of all kinds. Here's a guy that creepy Kevin Plank jumped on the side of the road and fired completely unfairly. And after he made him agree to take on the Sagamore horses exclusively, and Correa had to give up all his clients, so he had to completely start fresh. And he went to the Midwest, to Kentucky and Illinois, and rebuilt his business. And I cannot stress enough what a brilliant horse that he is, what a gentleman he is, and I could not be happier. I had kind of expected that she had, for the second year in a row, was going to leave the spinster basically as her distaff. However, Correa had her tuned up and had more to give. And with another horse, which is arrived here, she looked spectacular. And it sort of raised my eyebrows a little, because I kind of had expected that it was going to be like last year. But she was spectacular. She was not going to be beaten. In this spot, for Bravo, his first Breeders' Cup win. There's a number of jocks that got their first win. How about Ricardo Santana on the Batoli? How about Manny Franco with Sterling? That was the terrific score on Friday. Really a number of fun runs that way. Wayne Lloyd's win on Philadelphia. That was his first, I think, about 8 or 9 rides, maybe, in the Breeders' Cup. So all of that kind of story. Midnight Bijou, a little bit of traffic, a little bit of here and there, and that's just what he could. I'm just not convinced even with a cleaner trip that he's beating Blue Prize on the day. High marks, though, for Flavian Pratt. There's his name again. On Serengeti Empress, and for Tom Amy, I really applaud that they did not around. We're trying to race, get to the lead, give her the best chance that she has to win, and get rewarded with a third place finish in the Breeders' Cup as a 3-year-old, the best finishing 3-year-old in the race ahead of Dunbar and Sweet Dan. So good job by Pratt and Tom Amos and Joe Paletti with the third for Serengeti Empress. That was another nice story.
All right, let's go back to the Breeders' Cup mile. Story here, the two females, Uni and Got Stormy. Yeah. I had them flip-flopped. I had Got Stormy over Uni, but I coming out of that race at Keeneland, Uni certainly was coming in very good form. But given what Got Stormy did up at Saratoga, and I thought with the 7 weeks off, she was going to regroup and run well. She did. She runs second. It's number 11, Uni, over number 6, Got Stormy, number 10, Without Parole, third, and Circus Maximus, number 9, the Aiden O'Brien runner, runs fourth. But a nice performance from Uni, adding to the nice weekend for Chad Brown.
What was interesting about this was Rosario's tie, and there has been talk a lot of talk, in fact, that the race was a little bit devoid of speed. And then with the scratch of Bolo, the late scratch of Bolo, there was, you know, another element of speed coming out of the race. And so I undoubtedly, Joel and Chad had to be thinking, you know, we can't be too far out of it. However, high marks for Rosario for not, or at the very least, waiting to see how they came out of the gate, because they ended up going fast. They went 45-1 for the half mile at 109. So there was, as it turns out, plenty of pace. And the horses that were setting the pace, that Hey Gammon, who had a bit of a look with the touring for James Tate, Hey Gammon and El Tormenta, Eureka Da Silva, and also Foley Hero, the three of them ended up really prompting each other. And so there was pace. And to Rosario's credit, he didn't move early or do more than gain some, just at least some position, because she was sitting about, I don't know, maybe three or four from the back. And so for Rosario to make that determination as quickly as he did, it's important, because if he uses her early and anticipating that there's not going to be enough pace to take, you then blunt her finish. It's closer than she normally is. And from that standpoint, high marks to Rosario, because when she was produced, she was able to corral that stormy gate, you know, gave her a bit of a tussle for maybe 75 yards, but, you know, got Stormy one, you know, basically positioned where you expected. She was going to be behind the speed, but maybe because they went a little faster, that sort of blunted her finish. But the two of them ran absolutely great. The story that's not getting enough attention, how about Chad having without parole for John Gunther, whose whole season kind of went sideways after looking so good as a three-year-old, basically, you know, recaptures past form and ends up third in here.
Yeah.
That's got to be a story. I'll certainly get to John Gunther this week, and he's got to be thrilled to get a four and hit without parole. And I imagine he'll come back as a five-year-old with disappointment here. Circus Maximus, who I didn't get. I got to tell you, I was against him completely, and I didn't understand, you know, what the fuck was. And so I'm glad I kind of left him out. He ended up going off as the near third choice at a little under 4-1, and he ends up fourth in here.
Let's go back to really what was probably the most anticipated race of the weekend, the sprint, and a little bit of a disappointment in that at beginning of the day, Imperial Hint was announced out, scratched, and so that took a little bit of the juice out. But still, Mattoli, Catalina Cruiser, and Chancelot, Mattoli and Chancelot having worked so well over the track in the week and a half leading up to the race. I was using Imperial Hint on top, but then I scratched into Mattoli over Chancelot, and that's the way it's going to work out. And Mattoli just has turned out to be a monster this year. Number four, Mattoli. Number six, Chancelot. Whitmore gets up for third, and Gage runs fourth. But again, Mattoli, just what a season. I mean, the only blemish was that loss in the Vanderbilt up at Saratoga, but then the comeback in the forego, and then to win this race and do it the way he did. Really a good-looking effort from Mattoli yesterday.
He's a special horse, and there's a lot of nice elements to this. Santana winning his first Breeders' Cup race. The hard-charging type. How about the Hollingbrot? Bill and Corinne Hollingbrot, who Steve Asmussen started his career. They literally were, you know, one of his first clients outside of family. And the Hollingbrot, you know, has been a part of the racing team for, you know, several decades. And they ran into some trouble. It's now got to be 8-9 years ago. And they were contemplating leaving the game. And Steve Asmussen basically helped carry the Highland Cross for a while until things moved out for them. And, you know, they were able to re-engage their racing operation. And so the game is better for people like Bill and Corinne Hollingbrot And for them to get this kind of a win is just wonderful. And you can see how much it meant to them. It's really a real talent. And, you know, it's so funny. Esther Durea is so good on the breeding side of things, and just how vicious the marketplace is. And that if your first crop doesn't hit and doesn't score right away, you know, you just get, you know, pushed aside as a stallion and exported off to Japan or Korea or Turkey or wherever else. And Escondorea, you know, it didn't take long. As soon as any horse gets exported, it's invariably their produce starts to really click. And Escondorea was getting the toll in, and he's going to be a very attractive stallion because he's got middle distance speed, sprint out speed, as well as have the ability to win at 3/4 to 7/8. It's very nice performance. How about Whitmore coming into town late? Ron Boquette agonized over the decision, and then finally said yes. Lady and Pratt gave Whitmore a tremendous ride, and you do wonder if Imperial Hint had still been in the race, and if he had been in there to prompt even more pace. You wonder, I don't know if Matoli was going to beat, but just you do wonder if there was even more of a pace setup that Whitmore, you know, couldn't have impacted the race even more. But I know Ron McQuaid was thrilled with that finish, and the sprint did not disappoint.
And we're running out of time, but I just wanted to hit on one more race that, for me, was highly anticipated. Go back to the beginning of the day, the Filly and Mayer Sprint, because, again, like Matoli, Kafefi, just a really good season capped off by this win yesterday. But, boy, the disappointment was Come Dancing, who's just never in the hunt. Come Dancing winds up sixth in the field of nine, but Kafefi's the number one horse. Bellafina, I thought, ran very well. In fact, looked like may challenge in the last couple hundred yards and get by Kafefi, but Kafefi just had a little too much heart. Kafefi over Bellafina, and Dawn the Destroyer, a nice third for Kieran. But Kafefi, and I, the question now is Kafefi maybe in the conversation for three-year-old filly?
Yeah, she probably is. I mean, she's the sprint winner, but she might be. Yeah, absolutely. The story here, if people go back and watch the replay, Bellafina probably should have won this race. If they ran this race 10 times, Bellafina's going to win 5 or 6. She had all kinds of issues. And at the same time, let's also acknowledge that if Kafefi had drawn somewhere other than the wormhole, De Rosario gave her a tremendous ride. And, you know, getting out of the one hole, finding a spot to settle, getting out, you know, off the rail, I thought Rosario really painted a beautiful picture. But this race, go watch the replay a few more times. Very, very interesting event. And I think the two of them, if Bellafina came into this 4-for-4 at Santa Anita, and it's not as if those wins, you know, for the most part, came on the track as deep as it is right now. It came earlier. So it's kind of interesting. But she loves running out of the stall here at the very least. You know, a couple other quick highlights. Belgor Bay, got to give Marcus Hirsch in the first sprint, got to give Marcus Hirsch a lot of credit. Marcus saw Belgor Bay coming. And how about Peter Miller, who just absolutely points his turf sprinters to this spot? Doesn't matter if it's down the hill, if it's Del Mar, here, and whatever. It's 5 furlongs, doesn't matter. Belgor Bay, delighted for Gary Barber, who almost won two, got Stormy with the second. Gary Barber, another owner that is so good for the game. How about Ohm, now 7 years old, hit second again in this race, whether at 5 or down the hill. The horse that beat American Pharoah in their career debuts is pretty amazing. He's still running. And, of course, poor Christophe Clement. I happened to inadvertently watch the race with Mrs. Generazio. And she was having trouble seeing the screen and asked me to give her the play-by-play. And I almost said, gates are open, you lose, Pat. poor, pure sensation. Misses the break. I talked to Paco Lopez afterwards. He said, there's nothing I can do. He sort of took a half jump. Unbelievable. So pure sensation, in trouble immediately. And has to settle for fifth and beaten about, I don't know, three lengths. for everything. But Christophe Clement, he'll win one eventually. Fun to run, a great story. It may be the best three-year-old in training, with all due respect to Omaha Beach. It's fun to run after that win in Philadelphia. It's just spectacular. This was the horse that Juan Carlos Guerrero was just raving about at Haskell at the press conference. He told everybody, it's the best horse I've ever had, is the best horse I've ever seen, and what a performance from him. Iridesa, we talked about. Joseph O'Brien with his father, very close by, and that was very special. Vesalika ran her eyeballs out for Flavian Pratt and just got corralled late. Sister Charlie, really no real excuse for Sister Charlie. I mean, she ran fine. It's not like she didn't get the pace setter, even though Thais was scratched. Murth did the same job that Thais was going to do. Keep an eye on Sandy Logan out of this race, the three-year-old. Loved her coming in, and she didn't disappoint. And then going back to Friday, we saw, I sharing with my play of the weekend, and he was spectacular. Wesley Ward with the two-year-old, and obviously the situation that happened with Dale Romans, Dennis's moment, they'll live to fight again. British Idiom with a terrific performance, and that Donna Veloce in a second career start, what more could you ask? The horse going from 6 furlongs out to 8.5. I thought she was very courageous. All in all, a nearly perfect 2 days, Seth.
Yeah, and we've kind of alluded to it already, sewed up some Eclipse Awards, but also put some in play. I think on the two-year-old side, Tis the Law may be in a great place going to the Kentucky Jockey Club. And on the three-year-old side, I think the ball's in Maximum Security's court. I think if he goes on and wins the Cigar Mile, he's in a good spot for the three-year-old Eclipse as well.
Good point, and I would also mention that it's a good point about Tis the Law. I had not thought about him until you mentioned it. And there is one award that I hope the voters, who are usually blind without a cane, I hope that voters understand that Seth Klarman, who could have been the owner of the year any of the last 3 years, they better make Seth Klarman owner of the year already and stop looking at earning. Whatever the Dolphins win, some of these, giant factories, that's not what's important. Seth Klarman is the owner of the year and deserves the trophy come January.
Yeah, and they just have to find a better way to parse out owners that have partnerships and whatnot, and so everything gets included when you look at stats at the end of the year. They've been bad about kind of doing, getting the numbers properly for owners when they have different partnerships. They're all parsed out separately, and that shouldn't be that way. I mean, it's fine to do that, but there should be some way to combine them as well. All right, got to wrap things up because we're running a little late here, but do appreciate the visit. What's the game plan going to be? You going to stick out in Southern California for a few days for review? Steve? Did we lose Steve? All right, I guess we lost him. So I will anticipate that, yes, he is sticking out in Southern California for a few days. Steve, you still up? You're kind of going in and out. I heard you there for a second. Nope, lost him again. All right, we got to wrap it up anyway. But, tune in to SiriusXM's At the Races. Steve will be recapping all the action, replays here on the network in the morning. On OTB TV as well. I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. Do want to remind you, the new mobile site goes active tomorrow via your phone. So if you're logging on to Capital OTB Bet, it'll be the new mobile site tomorrow. So check that out. Also want to alert you that today is a football day here at the Racebook. Come on down, watch all the football action, all the racing action here at the Clubhouse Racebook every Sunday throughout the football season, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, early post time again at Aqueduct at noontime. That means I'll be back on in, an hour or so, less than an hour, 45 minutes, with Sunday afternoon OTB Live, looking at all the racing action. So stay tuned for that. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll see you in a few.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.